Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
I'm seeing double. I got migraines. I want to sue.
Everybody, this is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode, Season 9, Episode 26, That's the Guy. And now here are your guys, Tara Ariano and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah, is it? We haven't done this in almost a month. Hi.
Hello. How are you guys?
Very well. How are you?
I am great because at long last, it is time to announce the winner of the Red Rocket Labs 90210 Cookie Cutter Giveaway.
Woo!
Ta-da! First of all, I would like to say that all of the entries were amazeballs, uniformly
they were
clever,
delicious.
Hilarious, made me hungry / giggle hysterically. Picking a winner was extremely difficult, but we did not wimp out and choose ourselves, a la Kelly. Before I get to the winner, I would like to acknowledge some honorable mentions, starting with the Great Minds Think Alike and So Do Yours department. numerous folks mentioned either Pecan Sanders, Dead Biscotti,
yep.
McKay Runes, and Short Braid. Sure.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And variations on... ginger, including thieving ginger snaps and the gingerbread Hartley house. Hey, Erica S. We also had several mentions of oatmeal brazen cookies, like from jovial_gent on Twitter, and one from an anonymous submitter whom I will call Phyllis, on the theme of oatmeal blazen cookies, which a lot of parents eat. We also very much enjoyed at Natalie Pilon's Dylan's Forehead Crinkle Cookies, at Alone Together 82's Shortbread Shelf Heads, at Rube_Goldberg's Grandma Andrea's Vegan Wafers, quote, when you want to exchange the eggs, tee hee.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
At Meg Gonzo 1's Donna's Snickerdoodlariums. At Simon and Lazark's Double Stuff Oreos.
Very good. That's very
and
good.
A fantastic list from the Sisters Rugavane, North Marion Avenue, definitely representing with Kelly's Langue du Chat Derriere. That's cat tongue, cat butt. Uh-huh. Peach Pit Cells, which are free, and Hamunstashen. So good. But in the end, it came down to two. And much like Kelly, we were choosing between a Dylan-based cookie and a Brandon-based one. And while a trip around the world with Erica S.'s Dylan McKay's What the Hell Is His Actual Fortune Cookies sounded really appealing, not to mention mysterious, the winner is the equally mysterious Phyllis with Brandon's Snack Well, Well, Welly Well Wells.
Yeah!
I crack up every time. Thank you.
Yes.
Oh, Phyllis, congratulations.
Phyllis, thank you so much.
You have won a Beverly Hills 90210 cookie cutter from Red Rocket Labs and the eternal esteem of your Again With This production team. Thank you so much to everyone who entered for bringing us all so much holiday cheer.
Yes. And Phyllis, please email me at tara@previously.tv and I will get that into the mail very, very soon. Probably tomorrow.
Snack well, 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 yeah. Well, wells.
That's much better than Onorios.
Oh, no.
Oh. All right. Well, I guess we've postponed the inevitable long enough. And now on with the episode. Tara.
Yes. It's time to get into the season 9 finale. Our penultimate season finale of this whole damn series.
Oh.
Let's get into it, starting with our C plot. Of course, where else? Beat. Bookkeeping stuff. So Janet comes into the Beat office all excited about a mention that they got into the Chronicle. Positive. Surprise, surprise. Ignoring Steve, who is in turn ignoring her because he's just hung up a phone call in which he was delivered good news that has him fondling a hammer, not a euphemism, clip two.
The accountant called. He said we can afford batteries.
Ooh.
That's what accountants call to update you on.
Yeah.
Is your junk drawer status?
I don't know what they spend their money on. There's two of them. I mean, the exorbitant rent that of the space they don't need for the two of them.
It's whatever. Not health care for Janet.
Sure
is
isn't. So Janet seizes the hammer from Steve and smashes the calculator. It's actually a cute moment. I made a GIF. You can see it in the visual aids. She thinks the fact that they are in the black kind of means they have a valid profession, LOL. And that her mother can finally put Janet in the Christmas letter and also tell Steve he was right to pursue his vision of being a shitty trash tabloid, and then starts listing stuff they need to buy for the office. But Steve has already rented the club for an in the black party with lots of black lights. Apparently, she sighs that they're not reinvesting their battery money. But Steve has bigger plans than a new scanner. He wants to go national in a year with this enterprise again, run by two persons. What would national be? I ask you.
Well, and don't we already have that?
Yes.
Bat Boy? Good
yeah.
luck.
Yeah.
But I guess they're, quote, niche-oriented Gen X tabloid stories.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of room for lots of those.
Yeah. Remember when they made a website in 1998? Anyway, at the party.
Remember the webcam? It's like still running somewhere, like in the closet.
That would be a very funny bit if someone did it, by the way. At the party, Steve is in a leopard robe and a red ascot for some reason. You can see this in the visual aids also, if you must. He is trying to kiss on Janet with the promise of fluorescent twister later, but she's not interested, as her blazer would attest. Like, she's so buttoned up, she looks like a teacher on End of Green Gables. Also, she's no longer impressed by Steve for staying true to his gross vision suddenly, as she says in clip three.
In case you haven't heard, we're celebrating here. We made it. We're over the hump.
Oh, we finally made a career of titillating the masses. Hip hip hooray.
Janet, we're giving the people what they want. There's no shame in that.
Yeah, for a temporary thing, like a stepping stone or a stop along the way to something respectable. You know, now that I know that I could do this for the rest of my life, it's pretty much the last thing I want to do. Sorry.
What could have changed? We won't find out this week, but anyway, that's where Janet's at. And from here, their shit gets braided in with Kelly's, so stand by, we will come back to them. We also have a B plot to get to, but first, we have a message from Molly.
Rebecca, Molly's friend, let us know that Molly's been going through cancer treatment for the past year. Yet, even given her own personal challenges, she's never stopped giving back to her community. She helps run a nonprofit organization that provides support to new mothers in the form of home visits and free gear for baby and kids.
Oh, I love it. Sounds like Call the Midwife. Not only that, Molly is also a wonderful mother to her own two children and has somehow found the time to listen to this podcast three times through. Look, we would never try to choose the biggest hero among our listeners, and that's because we don't have to. Clearly, that person is Molly.
No kidding. So to give Molly a nice little surprise, Rebecca asked us to list the five ways Molly is a better support to new mothers than anyone on Beverly Hills 90210. No problem. Even though we haven't met Molly and don't know her history with children, we may be pretty certain about the following.
Number one, Molly has never tried to steal a new mom's baby, unlike Kelly.
Two, Molly's never lost anyone's toddler at the park because her meth use made her crash in the middle of the afternoon, unlike David.
Number three, Molly probably would pinch hit as a babysitter so that a teen mom could go for a college admissions interview, but she wouldn't act like taking a few hours to do so granted her a full understanding of what teen parenthood is like, which is exactly what Brandon did with Melissa way back in season one.
That guy. Number four, Molly wouldn't get a kid's hopes up for a fun day at the amusement park and then leave his mom to make excuses for her when she flaked, like Steve did for poor Zach.
Number five, finally, Molly wouldn't do anything Jesse did to screw over Andrea and send her running into the arms of a howdy doody looking floof clown.
Unless you're into that.
Well.
Oh, howdy doody looking floof clown. From all of us here and Rebecca,
keep being awesome, Molly. On to the B plot. Donna's love triangle turns into a line. Noah. Fucking Noah is so desperate to talk to anyone about his dumb Donna problems that he's moping around the beat office waiting for Janet to notice him and ask him what's wrong, which she eventually does. But then he's just like, no reason. Like, take your emo elsewhere, loser. God, I hate that shit.
And the scene, by the way, has been going on for like a week before the camera finally alights on him, like glowering in the background. It's actually kind of funny. There's like this police squad vibe to it, like he hadn't been there before. Totally unintentional, alas. Anyway, let's move
on. Since we're on Noah, may I just briefly give a qualified endorsement to Vincent Young's Instagram feed, because he is a real weird guy, and every photo he posts is like a 15th generation photocopy. Like, they're all super duper low res, blown up for Instagram, which is also really small. He's very into the Eagles right now. It's a real journey. And so I don't actually follow any other 90210ers on Instagram for some reason, just him. And it's very interesting. Anyway, so Donna's dealing with a customer when Noah plays offset to her Cardi B by making a scene while she's at work. By the way, that was a much more current reference when I made these notes in December. On to clip four.
You have a second?
Can it wait?
Just like our conversation that never took place last night.
Why don't you go try this on in the dressing room? I'll help you out in a second. Thank you. Noah, I was busy.
Okay. Doing what?
Something important. Please just trust me on that.
No, that's it, okay? I can't trust you.
You can't? Why, because I'm not ready to move in with you?
No, because you're always pressuring me about commitment. So here I am, right in front of you, asking you for it. And you're blowing me off.
Okay. I have a customer.
I've been pretty patient, you know? I've tried telling you if we can't move forward in this relationship, we should call it quits. I've been clear about that, right?
Noah, please.
Or throw.
When has she ever pressured him about commitment? Like, they keep breaking up, and every time they do, she seems 100% fine with it.
Yeah. Also, he slept with Valerie while she was roofied. I'm just going to keep fucking bringing that up, even when Again With This becomes like Felicity Edition or like Lawyers in Space Edition. I'll be like, by the way, remember that time that someone Valerie roofied and Noah slept with her anyway? I mean, let it go. Also, don't come to people's work and have feelings while they're trying to make a sale. It's just not done.
No. Anyway. So then Donna later is screening calls to avoid Noah when Wayne calls to ask her out for dinner. And to Kelly, she recaps her dumb boy drama trailing off because her problems are so much smaller than Kelly's, which we will get to. Kelly says that Donna's problems are important too. They're not. So apparently Donna had Wayne over and made them lobster. I don't know. Sure. He didn't expect to hear from her, since usually when a woman needs time to figure things out, it means he should fuck off, but not this time.
And she also, he didn't fuck off.
Right.
He called her, so don't be a stalker, Wayne. Anyway, sorry.
So she tells him that she and Noah broke up today, and now she thinks it was fate that she and Wayne even met, because if they hadn't, she'd be picking out drapes for the house that she and Noah would be shacking up in, and then takes a hard left in clip five.
Then I have this friend. And a few nights ago, she was in the wrong place at the wrong time. And now her life will never be the same.
That right there is why you must seize the moment. So hold on to what you have.
And if I have a crush on you?
You should hold on extremely tight.
Okay, what the fuck just happened? Donna's flirt technique is so weird that she's lucky that Wayne is so uninterested that he didn't ask one follow-up question about, like, wait, what happened with your friend? What?
Oh, my God.
It's really weird.
And his delivery continues to be, like, he continues to look at her like she's having a stroke, mm-hmm. which, I mean, okay, checks out, but I just don't understand that acting choice. Like, it's just proof that I think people are like, they set the lights and then they just leave.
Yeah.
Go smoke pot. And they're like, do it yourselves.
Oh my God. There's more of that in the next episode for sure. Mm. So whatever, they start making out, the camera pans up from them to this like huge picture of Cupids in the living room, which barf. And then that dissolves into them. She opens the door to her bedroom where she's lit a bunch of candles that are like table candles, like not bedroom candles. They're like long tapers. And she apparently like lit them at some time before they had dinner and they've been burning unattended in her room this whole time. Like, did you learn nothing from Cliff the hot firefighter? Come on, Donna.
Yeah. Plus, she still has those same fugly sheets that are clearly flammable.
Oh, my God.
And
yes.
This like make out. Grinding on the bed sequence goes on for, I don't know, two and a half years. It's really a long time.
So the next morning, Donna and her very bad rag curls, which you can also see in the visual aids, are making blueberry pancakes when Wayne comes up behind to molest her and say that last night was amazing. She wants to close the store. I just want to back up to a few episodes ago when she was like, the store's doing okay. Like, how is it even doing okay? You close it all the time.
Yeah.
But whatever. She wants to close it and go for a hike, but he's leaving for Acapulco. And she gets all wounded. And he's like, I know I told you about this, which he absolutely did. He has volleyball tournaments scheduled all summer. He reminds her that he did ask her to come with him and she better not say she can't because of work, given everything we know about her career. But of course, that is what she says to get out of it, saying that her life is there in L.A. and his isn't. And he gives her the forehead kiss of permanent goodbye, as it usually is, but assures her that just because this is definitely it for them doesn't mean she made a mistake by fucking him. I'm paraphrasing. And then there's a knock on the door. Of course, it's Noah. She tries to block the door with her body as he goes into his new rap in clip six.
I owe you a huge apology. I feel so stupid. I mean, I talked to Kelly last night. She told me what happened to her. That's why you couldn't tell me what you were doing.
Can we talk about this later?
Listen to me. You wanted me to trust you, right? I should never doubt you. I'm sorry.
Why don't we go to lunch and we can talk about everything? Everything okay?
Is everything okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. I just...
The pancakes are burnt. Look,
Shut up!
Also, really, Wayne, like, you can clearly hear everything from the porch of contemplation. Why don't you just flip the pancakes yourself?
Yeah.
You're a big boy.
Mm-hmm. That was just one of those Vincent Young line reads. Amuse you so much.
Want to get a beer later? No. All right.
So Donna and her tube top come to the club later to try and explain things to Noah, who is not interested. Just a few words about this tube top, which, of course, is also in the visual aids. Sarah?
Well, it's Donna and Donna's chesticles in a tube top. And then there's a shrug that is like... barely, it's like shoulder condoms. It's terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then I forget the pants situation. I think it's like white, high-waisted something. It's bad. I mean, mm-hmm. It's very 90s. Ooh.
Also, the print on the tube top is like this tiny floral print. Like, what is this Laura Ashley shit? It's a tube top. Whatever.
Yeah.
She says she's sorry as if he didn't fucking dump her hard and free her to do whatever she wanted with Wayne or anyone, and really has lost it, as we hear in clip seven.
I have always known what I want. And right now, for the first time, I am so confused. I hope you know how much I love you. So much. And I just want you to understand.
Understand? You should have thought about that before you lied and slept with someone else.
I can't change what happened, but I do know how much we love each other. And before we go ahead and say all these horrible things and we can't go back, could we please just try and work through this?
Do you love him?
I don't even know him.
I'm going down to the club, okay? I'm gonna find a really cute girl. I'm gonna take her home. Do the same thing you did the other night. Then I'm gonna come to your place of work and ask you to understand. How's that sound?
Please don't do that.
You did this.
He already did that. He already went to the store and fucked with her. Like, what? It was in this episode.
Yeah, I just don't. Like, dump. I will say that, I mean, I think I made a crack about it in the visual aids, like in my file name, mm-hmm. about glycerin is sad. But yeah. This is actually pretty sincere. Like, this feels like a true reaction from Tori Spelling, who I guess they were still dating at this time. I don't really care to look it up.
No.
But given how dumb this whole conversation is and that they shouldn't be having it. Mm-hmm. She does a pretty good job.
Yeah, I mean, I gift it also. Like, it goes on for too long, but it does look like real crying. Like, she's not being vain about it for once.
Yeah, true.
But this is all really toxic and bad, and whatever leads to them breaking up forever, like, good. I mean, I know she ends up back with David, but still. So yeah, I don't know what the hell hours the store is actually keeping, because Donna goes from her fight with Noah, which was happening at a time when the club was as full as it ever gets, to the still open store to make Kelly do the emotional labor of assuring her that Noah's not just going to have a spite one night stand just because he said he was. And what do you know, Wayne is also there in a shirt I know Sarah will hate, but which I kind of like. You can see it in the visual aids and decide whether it's good or bad. It's like a very Aloha shirt. For one thing, it actually fits.
Yeah, that's it.
So Kelly releases Donna to go talk to him and receive his gift of duty-free tequila, because it turns out he has a friend in town who makes high-end mountain bikes and wants Wayne to help him get his business off the ground. How? And Donna's all baby voice, so you're staying because you got a job? But he's actually staying to be with Donna. Good Lord, you just met last week. This is ridiculous. Who cares? Finally, our A plot. Kelly is in no kind of state to be carrying a gun, and Dylan's no help since he still can't leave Gina alone. So when we left Gina, she had passed out in the bathroom at the skating tryouts. And so now Gina, attended by David, is being wheeled into the ER, complaining that this is excessive and insisting that she's fine. When the doctor hears she was unconscious for 2 minutes, he overrules her attempts to leave and orders a bunch of tests. And then she starts yelling at David in clip 8.
I don't need needles stuck in my arm, and I don't need any blood tests, and I definitely don't need you taking care of me.
That's goddamn right you don't. Rip out those tubes and head for the exits until he is ejected from the hospital, because he is pulling the first series in a larger series of unbelievably enraging Lord Pissfaces. Like, if you don't want to be there, don't be there.
Yeah.
I mean, this whole storyline is like, I'm so torn about it, because on the one hand, Dylan, leave Gina alone, but on the other hand, it infuriated, incompetent, flappity, break everything in the apartment David, spoiler, so I kind of didn't mind it.
Yeah,
he is the worst. Get rid, please.
Yeah, he's real bad. Speaking of not wanting to be there, Kelly brings her trauma to the store to drive away customers, and cue Donna for a PSA in clip 9.
So what do you think? If that's the message you want to put out there, be my guest.
Oh, well, that's... Thanks for your help.
Kel, what happened to you was a crime of violence, not of sex. It wasn't about wearing provocative dresses. It wasn't anything you did.
They're lucky that this happened before Yelp, so that this customer couldn't go on and be like, the sales girl was basically saying their clothes were trampy. Because what? I mean, I know where it's coming from, obviously, but like, just stay home. Donna's got it on lock, or she'll shut it down.
Yeah, exactly.
So Donna then tries to make Kelly tell Matt what happened because he misses her, but Kelly doesn't want him to know. Because she hasn't learned anything from, you know, keeping things from Matt. Like, that's been their entire storyline this whole season. Whatever. She's going to go for a walk on the beach, and Donna offers to go with her and close down the store, of course. But Kelly wants to be alone anyway. So before she goes, Donna, the relationship expert, decides to give some unsolicited advice in clip 10.
Matt's going to want to hold your hand. He's going to want to kiss you. He's going to want to have sex with you. He's not going to understand when you don't. I just can't tell him. He'll help you if you do. If you don't, I'm worried you're going to lose him. Me too.
Why would he leave now when she's right. been a nonstop crotch to him the entire length of the time they've known each other? And he's still like, well, I guess I'll get a divorce for my mentally ill wife and stay here with you.
Yeah.
You bitch. Like, they hate each other. Why? This will be no different for him.
Right. But in addition to that, like, if your first response when you get sexually assaulted is, I can't tell my boyfriend of several months, like, after you've already been through his mentally ill wife that he didn't divorce, like, that should probably tell you something about the solidity of her relationship or lack thereof. You know, not that she's obligated to tell him anything. She isn't. But if she doesn't want to bring him into the cone of silence, like, that says something, I feel.
Yeah. And it says you're not friends. So.
Right.
Maybe you shouldn't be going out anymore. And also, Donna, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, shut up, Donna.
Yeah, like, he's going to want to have sex. Then what are you going to do? Like, right. Dude, give it a day. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Anyway, Kelly leaves, and right behind her on his way to Matt's office is Joe the rapist. He wants to sue the cops for beating him the night of his arrest, and I know he's a bad man, but he still should. The next day, Gina comes by David's to apologize for biting his head off in the hospital. She's already leaving when he says she can tell him whatever it is. And so she says that when she was 12, she was the top ranked skater in the country. And then when she hit puberty, her body changed. She had to skate harder and she did worse. And she thought things would be different if she had a different body. And then she says when she throws up, started small, but it escalated. It didn't affect her skating career, but it makes her feel like she has control over something in her life. And he thanks her for telling him, as he should. She says he's the first person she has told. And just as a side note, they have this conversation sitting on his stoop, and she's wearing like a sweatshirt and, I mean, not yoga pants because there wouldn't have been at the time, but like loose fitting, you know, jersey, comfortable pajama adjacent pants. And it's like, I appreciate that they didn't have her get all done up to come over and have this dumb conversation like in a tube top. Donna, like, she looks like a normal person the day after she got out of the hospital for passing out from bulimia.
Yeah. Plus her job prior to, and like occasionally when she first came on the show, was that she was a personal trainer.
Yeah. Whatever happened with that gym she was going to open with the money that she scammed from Felice?
I don't know.
Maybe
it got scammed off her again by Bobby.
Her mother. Yeah, yeah. Could be. So then we see that fucking Dylan is out postering about the $100,000 award reward he's offering for information that leads to the arrest of Kelly's rapist.
With
you see the poster, but it's
by crazy handheld camera work. Like, really?
Well, ooh, he's downtown.
Verite.
He's in Gritty Town. So I mean, guess he did not run this enormous violation of Kelly's privacy past her first. And as he's walking back to his stupid motorcycle, a possibly indigent woman tells him she was there and offers a lot of details that we know are true. But then he doesn't try to get any information from her to follow up, like her name or where she stays. Nope, she's just on her way, but with one last thing to say. Clip 11.
God bless you for what you're doing.
Even the homeless have to tell the gang they're great. Jesus.
Yeah, my notes were literally, really, lady? You know that's not Donna, right?
I know, seriously. So we then see some other dude come up on the flyer and lip read it to himself, which is kind of funny. So Matt has apparently stalked Kelly to the beach and is ignoring her clear requests that he go away to beg her to let him help her with whatever's going on, which he then forces her to say is not that she wants to dump him. And he gives her a huge dumb grin, promising that he can help, which she wipes off his face by blurting that she was raped. And he immediately says he wants her to tell him everything. And I think that Daniel Cosgrove makes a smart choice of starting to touch her face and then stopping himself to respect her boundaries, because I know that wasn't the terrible directors they're getting these days.
Yeah, sure wasn't. Because, I mean, and they also have her like snuggling with Dylan in every scene that they're in together. Like,
yeah,
I mean, okay, it's not impossible. I don't know, but maybe it's just that I hate Dylan and find him ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway,
yeah,
good job, Kazi.
So he tells her intensely that he loves her and that this changes nothing, and Kelly cries and lets him hug her finally. So that's nice. So Matt finds Dylan in his office at the club where he's apparently been sleeping to say that Kelly told him about her assault and also let us all know that he's focusing on what's important right now. Clip 12.
She said she was on her way to meet you.
If you came over here to try to make me feel guilty about that.
Do you? She said you've known for a couple of days.
I shouldn't bother you.
Why is that?
She's the victim of a sex crime. It's easier, maybe, to talk about that with someone who you're not having sex with.
At
right
the moment.
Now. Jakes.
Also, both of you, just shut the fuck up. This is not about you. But Dylan's phone rings. It's the lip-reading dude that we saw. He heard a guy bragging about the assault, and if Dylan meets him the next day and shows him the cash, this tipster will give Dylan the braggart's name. So then Gina has made David a lunch of sandwiches, mini rice cakes, and Dr. Pepper. You've seen the visual aids. Official sponsor of every meal of this show. Which he graciously receives by asking if he's going to have to lock the bathroom door after she eats. Wow, she must be very glad she confided in him. Ha ha. What?
Yeah.
But she laughs him off and says she's fine. And he then pries into what led to her collapse at the tryouts. She denies that it was the pressure of the situation, since she had started being bulimic long before that. She always feels like she's not enough, and sleeping with Dylan, knowing he was in love with someone else, didn't help her state of mind. But now she knows that she hurt herself. So good. Stay in that mode. She won't. Spoiler. Donna and her completely awful outfit come home to find that Kelly has pulled herself together, including doing something stupid with her hair. Donna nicely says she looks great, and Kelly says that Matt's on his way to pick her up. To Donna's question, she confirms that she told him about the assault and recaps what we already know. She's getting ready to put Donna's lipstick in her purse, which, by the way, Kelly still has a cut on her lip, so that's Kelly's lipstick now, I hope. But anyway, yeah. The soundtrack freaks out, and we see that Kelly's purse also contains the gun that Dylan gave her in the last episode. Dun dun dun. Back to David's house, he's trying to amuse Gina with an elaborate domino toppling setup. Sure. To her question, he comments that the dominoes were left by the kid who used to live there. Quit showing off about remembering last season, writers. And that's not all he left. Clip 13.
Check it out, old maid. Huh?
Are you trying to distract me?
No. Just really good at old maid. Besides, I thought you said you could stop.
I can. It's just gonna be a major accomplishment. Your diversions are really helping me a lot.
That line reading was the peak of Brian Austin Green's career. He should retire.
Check it out, old maid.
No, I'm just really good at old maid. It was like so charming that I like rewound it five times. I was like, is that you? Lord Pissface?
Well, and my notes have, you can see Vanessa Marcil, rather, falling in love with Brian Austin Green in the scene. Like, she gives him a look of such pure love. It's like, oh, honey.
Yeah.
If only we could tell you what is to come.
Yeah.
So then Dylan comes home and David barks at him not to slam the door for fear that he'll knock the dominoes over, but they stand and Dylan sucks in clip 14.
Some things are stronger than they look.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That groan speaks for us all. I love it.
It really does.
So she takes off and David says she wasn't feeling well, so she's going to stay over. And Dylan gets snitty about it as though he has standing. And David just feeds his assy attitude by adding that he's going to sleep on the couch. And Dylan's like, whatever. And David tries to get territorial, ordering Dylan to leave Gina alone. Dylan keeps moving. David goes into his room to check on Gina sitting on his bed. Cut to Dylan sitting on his bed and jealously listening to David and Gina enjoying spending time together, which he can't let continue. Going to stand in the doorway creepily until David gets up and closes it in his face, which, thank you. So Dylan stomps off to dull the noise of Gina giggling with a beer and stomps out, activating the dominoes like a dick.
Also, Dylan. Where are you going? Like, he takes the beer with him.
Right.
Nice.
He's
going to
drink it in the car.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Like all sober people do. Yeah.
Sure.
So for their first date after Kelly's traumatic assault, Matt has brought her to the fucking club. Build another set, please. He's breaking confidentiality by telling her not only about his robbery client who wants to sue the cops, but saying his name. Cool. Kelly's focused on why, if Joe got caught, he isn't in jail. And Matt tells her about getting him off on exigent circumstances, which leads to this exchange. Clip 15.
You got a violent criminal off on a technicality?
Kelly's not a violent criminal. He stole a stereo. Besides, the police have to follow the rules, too.
Why? No one else does.
Oh, she's a nihilist now.
Also, learn how fucking lawyering works. Please, someone, anyone.
Right.
This is far from the only complaint we're going to have about this in upcoming episodes, but Jesus Christ, what were they teaching? Never mind. You didn't go to Hamilton Law.
So Dylan goes to the club to yell at Matt for not harassing the cops on Kelly's behalf in ways that aren't clear. And of course, this devolves into a pissing contest between the two of them over who can look after Kelly harder in clip 16.
How could you do that?
Do what?
That. All of it. Look, she doesn't need a scene like this right now.
Dylan, she wanted to come here, so I brought her. And don't even pretend you know what she needs, because neither of us do.
Thank you, Jesus.
Yeah.
Although, that's all.
But the reason that Kelly said she wanted to come there was because they only have three sets. I'm just, for the record.
Yeah, true.
So Kelly, meanwhile, is getting her own drink at the bar, and she gets jostled by the crowd on her way back to Matt. And when she drops the glass and it shatters, she flashes back to Joe showing her his knife. But this time she seems to make out his face more clearly. Or maybe not, because she thinks the guy that she bumped into is Joe and starts screaming at the crowd to stop him. And then when Matt does get the dude to turn around, she realizes she was wrong and apologizes. And then she and Matt end up kind of like dancing in the middle of the floor. It's weird.
Next to Steve in his very obvious homage to Hugh Hefner outfit.
Yeah.
It's fucked up. It's a fucking mm-hmm. show.
So the next morning, David and Gina wake up together on his bed with their legs all tangled, but still fully clothed and both extremely awkward with each other. But Gina decides to lock onto a track by suggesting that she call Donna and tell her she's staying over there again tonight, to which David reacts with an extremely dumb smile that is kind of endearing. I'm sorry. She says she can stay. He says she can stay as long as she wants. And they cut back to her smiling back at him with bedhead. And even with bedhead, it's flawless. Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so cute.
On my best day, I couldn't. And that's her first thing in the morning. It's not fair. So Dylan is over at the Walsh house looking for Kelly and asking Matt if she's gotten any sleep. Kelly herself appears back in depression wear to say that she hasn't, though she seems a little more spry, if rueful. And Dylan goes to meet Sean, the tipster, in a dark bar. To Dylan's question as to whether the accused rapist is present, Sean will only say maybe. So Dylan will only put down $300 as a show of good faith. Oh, Dylan, this is how your money got stolen in the first place. So then Sean remembers that the guy said that she was hot. Dylan drops more bills and orders Sean to point him out. Sean says he's early. Dylan will wait. But he also has a warning for Sean in clip 17.
Don't say anything else about the girl who was attacked, or you'll be picking pieces of this beer bottle out of your face.
I just want them to stop making him a tough guy. This act, the actor who's playing the tipster is like a foot taller and wider than Luke Perry. Please stop.
Yeah.
It's, and then it's what's coming silly. Up is like, oh, couldn't you just let this play out? Couldn't. Well, we'll get to it.
Yes. For now, Janet has wisely blown off work, so Steve is forced to ask Kelly for help looking at cover options for the Beat's Best Of issue so he won't blow his deadline in an hour. You know how you put out a Best Of issue in May? Anyway, Kelly likes the Wolf Boy story, she can see in the visual aids, at which Steve confesses that all his wolf features are fake, that they used a shot of Steve himself from seventh grade, and it is cute. It clearly is.
It is totally Teen Zeering. And in my notes, I was like, I think that might be Teen Zeering. And then Steve admitted that it was Teen Sanders. And I was like, nice.
I'm such a sucker every time they do that with old photos of the cast. Like, it's so cheap. And yet every time they do it, I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
They do it with him more than the others, I think, because he was a very cute kid.
Yeah, like the smile was always there. That like, boing. Yeah.
Yep. He also shows her how a beach babe is a composite of three different models. And Kelly is grateful to him for taking her mind off, you know, things. So sometime later, Sean tells Dylan that the guy's out in the alley, so off they go. But it's so that Sean and his buddy can roll Dylan. Ha ha! That's what you get, you dummy. You're not Batman. You're an idiot.
No.
Someone in a baseball cap joins the fight to break a chair on one of Dylan's assailants. And, of course, it's Matt. And the guy he's fighting says he doesn't know anything and that Sean just paid him $100 for this. He then has to try to pull the Dilgelante off his prey in clip 18.
Stop whining! You gonna say you're sorry? You did it for the money! You should die!
Dead end?
Definitely. What took you so long?
I had to finish my beer.
Oh, he's so cool. He's putting the cash back in his shirt's Velcro pocket. Okay, dude. I hope you get rolled on your way to your dumb motorcycle.
I mean, I sort of like the idea that they, you know, they set this up. And like Matt was also in the bar, but then we get no follow up on that. And Dillwig is such a tool. Like, really? Like, for such a tough guy who's, you know, impregnated people at various continents, why would you just fall for that? Like, oh, let's go at this back door at this bar you've never been to before. Cool idea, dude.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So Kelly's alone in bed, tossing with flashback nightmares from which she wakes up screaming. Donna and her dumb hair run in to comfort her and say it's over, which Kelly says it's not, and it won't be until the guy pays for what he did to her. So then Gina and Dylan end up alone together awkwardly in the guy's kitchen. She makes the mistake of volunteering that she's not hanging out with David to hurt Dylan or get some kind of reaction out of him. He says he knows. And then she makes another mistake, which is to ask how Dylan is. He claims he's fine. She asks what he'd say if they were still friends, and he admits that things suck right now. If he were still her friend, she'd say she feels the same. But that David is sweet and it feels good to spend time with him. So what are they going to do? Well, they're going to stand really close together and try not to kiss is what. We'll see how that works out. So when Janet does make it back to the beach, she sees it's full of women and thinks something lewd is going on. But it turns out Steve has made the space available for a rape survivors support group after they lost their old location. And Steve wins over Janet again. So then David brings home flowers, but Gina isn't in his room because she's in Dylan's bed naked. Whoops. So you can see in the visual aids, the reveal of David backing away from seeing Gina in bed, like she's covered in scales, and then smashing the flowers against the wall and kicking an ottoman and then kicking a kitchen chair and then trying to like stomp out of this house in a huff. But much as Dylan was stopped by that door in an earlier episode, he has trouble with the knob. So.
And they didn't do another take. And no, like he almost trips over the ottoman. It's just the whole thing is just impotent and pathetic and hilarious. Bye, bitch.
Yeah, which obviously there's a gift. So Matt is in his office meeting with Joe about the viability of his police brutality case. Matt is disgusted by Joe, but does think he has a case, so he has no choice but to take it, apparently. Joe wants to know if there's anywhere around there he could get his lady something nice in anticipation of the big settlement that Matt's going to get him. And Matt directs him to now wear this. So this is our last scene of the season, everybody. Joe has just left Matt's office when Kelly calls Matt. Matt will come down in 15 minutes so he can bill another quarter hour. So I guess it's okay for him to ignore his morals if he is fleecing Joe while doing so. I don't know.
So then he was court appointed, so Joe isn't paying him, but cool.
Well, he would be for this, for a civil trial.
Oh, yeah, I guess. Yeah, that's true.
So then in saunters Joe. She recognizes him. He recognizes her. She orders him out. He puts his fingers up to his lips creepily and closes the glass door. And while he's locking it and pulling out his wee knife again, Kelly is fumbling for her gun, pulling it on him, cocking it, and unloading the whole thing in his direction, continuing to pull the trigger over and over as we fade to black, not knowing if she shot his outline in the glass or what, because season finale, that's where we leave it.
Mm.
And we are out of things to say.
Well,
what a season it's been.
Whenever I go into the IMDb page for the show to do the next on section, it brings me automatically to the episode listing, and it starts, annoyingly, with season 10. And yeah. Right at the top is like, after Kelly shoots and kills her rapist. So, like, I have been looking at that summary for seriously 3 years.
Yeah.
Off and on. So, like, finally, she shot the motherfucker. I mean, I'm still going to have to look at it, but it was quite an anticlimax for me. That was a poor choice of term, but here we all are.
That's so funny, because when I hit that bookmark, it takes me to the first season. Fascinating. All right, let's close it up with the episode MVP. Oh, God, it's so hard.
It really is. I mean, Gina, her hair looks great and she infuriates David, but then also gets very charming responses from Brian Austin Green. So let's go with Gina.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, everyone else is sort of compromised. Like, I don't want to give it to Kelly. And David is like kind of endearing right up until the end. So, yeah, sure, Gina, get yours. Fair enough. Least valuable player. As ever, leaving aside the rapist, yeah. Who is your least valuable player?
Oh, God. I mean, spoiled for choice.
I'm going to say Dylan for trying and failing to take the law into his own hands in a very stupid way.
Yeah. Also, he gave the gun to Kelly that, like, check off. It will continue going off in next week's season premiere. So, yeah. And that belly itching blocking is back.
In the next one.
No, in this one, too. I just didn't put it in the visual aids.
Oh, really?
I was okay. In denial. Yeah. Like, I realize this isn't, you know, the character's fault, but the evolution into the, you know, beer drinking tough guy is really not working.
Yeah, if you got fleas, get that taken care of, because no one wants to see you scratch your tummy. Also, for sleeping with Gina again after she specifically told him to, like, leave her alone, because leave her alone. I mean, not that she's not capable of giving consent and obviously did, but, like, just, you know, let her try and have something with David if she says it makes her feel happy and good about herself.
And also, that's your roommate and your friend that you've known since high school. Mm. Maybe don't do that.
Yeah, don't.
Maybe give Mary from Vegas a call.
Yeah. So it's the season finale, which means we also have to name our season MVP.
It's been so very long since we had a season finale. Did we have that cue the last time?
No, I think that's new. Sounds new anyway.
Nice work,
very exciting. Wow, the season, I just want to remind everybody, also included Brandon and Val. But I'm still going to say Gina is my season MVP. She's the most natural soap actor. Her character is fun to watch. She had all that business with her scammy mother. She's an excellent replacement for Val. I think she has added a lot to the show, and I always like to watch her. So, Gina.
Yeah, I agree. She has excellent hair. She dresses like a normal 20-something.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they finally cracked what they were sort of maybe trying to do with Val. With Gina.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this character is a much better realization of that sort of Lucy Coe style soap villain who you're like, well, I do feel a little sorry for you, but mostly I enjoy watching you enjoy stirring shit up. So, yeah, Gina.
All right. Season LVP. Oh my God.
I can't believe we're not going to hear that again for months and months. Oh,
Jesus. Dylan, no one wanted you to come back, and you have really added nothing to the proceedings since you did.
Brandon, I know you left like 20 episodes ago, but not only do you suck, but after you left, the show was so much more boring and harder to actively hate. Not impossible, because I'm a professional, but difficult.
Yeah, good call.
Mm.
Let's do the Kim challenge.
Bad, bad, and dangerous to me.
Five ways in this episode, Dylan proved he is mad, bad, and dangerous to know. Well, he gave Kelly that gun that she maybe killed a guy with.
Yeah. It's bad to just follow a non-hippie to a second back bar alley location.
his graphic design on his flyer was very bad.
It can be dangerous to crumple large denomination bills because they tend to be new and you'll get paper cuts on your knuckles.
Interesting. And it's bad, as previously mentioned, to sleep with the girl that your roommate has expressed an interest in. That's just dirty pool.
Yeah. That's five. Next time on Again With This, it's the home stretch, people! Emphasis on stretch. In the 10th and final season premiere, Kelly kills her rapist and is a bitch about it. It's not Wayne's World. David brings the Peach Pit After Dark dance floor to yet another stock standstill with a piss-faced toxic masculinity straw pole, and Steve's boys can swim. You'll want to swim in a vat of Maalox when you get a load of the visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This, and you can find those on our website. That's againwiththis90210.com. You can follow us on Twitter as well, at AWT90210. I'm Old Maid Regional Champion Sarah D. Bunting, and I'm on Twitter, at Tomato Nation. My co-host is Rube Goldbergian Domino Contraption, Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter, at Tara Ariano. And our producer is alleyway ass-whooping wingman, David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beep-a-rooney.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.